Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we have a very busy show. We have a guest from the Partnership for the Civil Justice Fund, Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, rejoining Cindy Sheehan Soapbox to talk about Obama's new so-called Commission on the Militarization of Police that appointed somebody who's a known abusive cop. So we'll talk to Mara about that and what we can do. And on December 9th, it will be the 33rd anniversary of the arrest of Mumia Abu-Jamal. So we'll have a few commentaries from Mumia and Prison Radio. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Mara Verheyden-Hilliard from the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund. Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
Mara, I recently had you on about the fusion centers and Occupy. Before we get into the current topic, has there been any developments around that?
Well, it was very interesting. From the reports that we were able to put out, we've gotten so much feedback from people around the country in terms of their own experiences and concerns with the fusion centers. And, you know, it's very clear that they're just running rampant in terms of, that completely unchecked lack of oversight and the devotion of so much money into what is essentially domestic spying.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it ties in somewhat to what we're going to talk about today. In light of the unrest around the recent grand jury decision for the killer cop Darren Wilson of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, Obama created a task force on the militarization of the police. And interestingly enough, not a task force on the seemingly epidemic of, cop killings around the country. And your organization, the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, has put out a statement saying that with the appointment to that task force of former D.C. Chief of Police Charles Ramsey, the commission seems to be window dressing. And just tell our listeners why this appears to be so.
Well, as you mentioned, in the wake of the murder of Mike Brown in Ferguson, people have been in the streets, and they've been in the streets since August. And with the grand jury coming back with no indictment, rather than people just saying, well, I guess that's it, people are out in the streets in force almost every single day all around the country. Now with the grand jury coming back in Staten Island, refusing to indict the police officer who murdered Eric Garner,
right?
It's very clear that there is an uprising in the United States right now. And the Obama administration is plainly worried about it, so much so that they scrambled to have this big event on Monday that was really, in our view, just a big photo opportunity day of events related to police conduct in the United States. But significantly, the administration and President Obama selected to co-lead a new task force that he announced on policing and militarization of the police. He chose Commissioner Charles Ramsey of Philadelphia, who's the former chief of police in Washington, D.C. And during his tenure in Washington, D.C., Chief Ramsey was known for his implementation of militarized policing, of his mass violation of fundamental civil rights and constitutional rights. He was responsible for multiple mass arrests. He oversaw a police force that acted with impunity against peaceful demonstrators, including extreme acts of brutality. And when he left the District of Columbia, he left in disgrace. The district ended up paying out as a result of lawsuits that our organization, the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, brought. They ended up paying out tens of millions of dollars, more than $22 million.
Right.
And more significantly, we were able to put into place in the district major changes and reforms in police conduct related to the restrictions on police handling of demonstrations. Now, those restrictions were explicitly pulling back Charles Ramsey's illegal police tactics. So how can he be put in charge of any commission pretending to have any element of reform?
It's amazing. You know, you said clearly the Obama administration is worried about all these uprisings, but it doesn't appear that they're worried about the people in the streets whose rights are being violated and who are getting abused by the militarized police force with the appointment of Charles Ramsey to this task force.
The appointment of Charles Ramsey makes it 100% clear that they have no expectation or intention of any substantial change, because Charles Ramsey is not only not capable of it, but it's by his own demonstrated leadership, it's not, he's has no desire for it. But they've obviously put him there to be a public, you know, presentation, to be a voice. In 90 days, they will come out with some report that will probably have grand subject headings and virtually no meaningful content. Frankly, I think we could all tell where this is going when at the very onset on Monday, the administration officials said that the administration has no intention of pulling back on the huge transfer of military equipment to the hands of civilian police forces.
And it's what also makes it so Orwellian, because they're appointing a task force to investigate something that the federal government is doing. The federal government is the one who is arming the police forces with these high-level military weapons.
Yeah, the federal government since the 90s, in fact, beginning under Clinton, under President Bill Clinton, began pouring military equipment into local police forces. And they did that under the phony war on drugs line. After September 11th, they then began using that as the basis. And between 2001 and 2011 alone, the local police forces, state police forces, city police forces, were given $34 billion, $34 billion in grant money to buy military equipment. And we're talking, you know, grenade launchers, machine guns, armored carriers. Now, when you take what's supposed to be a domestic police force that's supposed to be supposedly serving a civilian population, and you turn it into a military or a paramilitary force, that force is looking at the people of the United States, at the civilians of the United States, at all of us as a military enemy. And you can see that playing out with these police murders over and over and over again across the United States, where the police command, the prosecutors, they do nothing. The police are allowed to kill in the United States with impunity.
Well, and the window dressing, or who this commission is attempting to assuage by, you know, the appointment of this commission, there has been a lot of talk, you know, these protests, especially in Ferguson, I don't know so much about the one in New York City yet, but in Ferguson, it appears to be led by African-American, you know, community leaders, community members, and then we see liberals, you know, white liberals speaking out of their privilege, denouncing looting instead of denouncing the conditions that led up to the grand jury decision and the unrest. And so do you think this commission is attempting to assuage Obama's base of these white liberal Democrats?
Sure. I mean, it's certainly obvious that the commission and all the meetings that were held on Monday were intended to do, I think, both that in terms of sort of giving some cover to those who wanted just as a matter of routine, absolutely and blindly support the Democratic Party, regardless of Democratic Party's conduct and its elected officials' conduct. And it's also, I think, an extremely ineffective, but certainly an attempt to try and tamp down the outrage that people are feeling nationally. And that is obviously not working. People are in the streets. People are going to keep being in the streets. And, you know, as you see, people are chanting with signs, you know, Black Lives Matter. And I don't think that people are just going to turn around at this point and say, well, okay, I guess it's enough and we'll just go back inside. Things are reaching a tipping point. And the people of the United States are really saying we are not going to allow ourselves to be subject to a policing operation that is like a war zone and an occupying military force.
And that's why your work at the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund is so important. You highlight this. This is this new commission is just a blatant attempt just to, you know, smooth things over, give cover to these police forces all over the country. But as an attorney, Mara, what do you see happening with these grand juries refusing to indict these killer cops?
Well, grand juries, it's an extremely low bar for an indictment. I mean, you know, for federal grand juries, for example, where there's national statistics, they indict 99.9% of the time. And I think the number was like 162,000 grand juries convened in the last year. So it is not complicated to have a grand jury indict because the bar is low. It is merely saying, you know, is there sufficient information that the person has taken an action that has broken the law? And it isn't that you have to prove that they've broken the law beyond a reasonable doubt. In fact, in a grand jury proceeding, you're not even going through the whole volume of evidence. Grand juries, you're not even required to provide exculpatory evidence to a grand jury. But you can see with the police, they allow the police to testify. The prosecutors are basically acting as defense attorneys. These police officers are not being subject to some sort of, you know, intense cross-examination or impeachment as would, you know, presumably normally happen in a criminal trial proceeding. Mm-hmm. It's just a grand jury, and yet here the prosecutors come in, they say, well, we're going to grand jury because they themselves aren't arresting when they could. And then they turn it to the grand jury so that they can be one step away and say that they're not responsible for the outcome, that that's somehow the grand jury's representative of society when, you know, it's not, and the prosecutors are basically defense attorneys for these killer cops.
Yeah, well, and thank goodness the people are out in the streets. And like you said, they're not going to go home just because Obama appointed this sham commission. So, Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, tell my listeners where they can get more information about the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund.
Well, we encourage people to come to our website, which is justiceonline.org. That's justiceonline, all one word, .org, where you can sign up to get critical news alerts on breaking stories. When we have major information from one of our cases that we're releasing, you will get it first, and updates like the Fusion Center report. So it's not high volume. It's a great way to plug into what's going on a national civil rights, civil liberties scene, and also to join with us in action campaigns where, you know, we are fighting for the issues that all of us believe in.
Well, Mara, thank you again for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and thank you for exposing this and highlighting this issue. We really appreciate you and your work there.
Thank you, Cindy, and thank you for everything.
Now Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox will present two commentaries from prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. Mumia, like I said, was arrested on December 9th, 33 years ago, and has been on death row in Pennsylvania, mostly in solitary confinement for the past 33 years. So also in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania State Legislature, signed by Governor Tom Corbett, has passed a law saying that it's against the law for prisoners and those formerly incarcerated from speaking publicly. The law targets journalists, nonprofits, and individuals who aid prisoners in communicating to the outside world. And of course, this is a law to gag Mumia, who has an active radio show from prison. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with some commentaries from Mumia Abdul-Jamal.
Death for a cigarette. The name Eric Garner is now enshrined in a grim annal of history. It joins Mike Brown, Romarly Graham, Alan Bluford, Dontre Hamilton, and thousands of others who were murdered by those their taxes helped pay for, cops. In many ways, Garner's case is even more egregious than Brown's, for it was videotaped, and one sees his takedown, his incessant choking, his unconsciousness, and shortly thereafter, his death. Now the words, "I can't breathe," have become joined with the cry, "Hands up," reminders of the Garner and Brown killings at the hands of police. Both cases are also noted for the behavior of grand juries, which now appear reckless beyond belief in their inability to return indictments against cops. The grand jury immigrated here from England, where, as it was then called, Grand Assizes, a body of about a dozen knights under the direction of a baron or some other noble, would investigate cases and charge people. Later, they became tools of the king. Today, they are instruments of the prosecutors and used, just as under kings, to target whom they wish and to clear whom they wish. Outrage stems from the long history of its use to protect cops, yes, even killer cops. This, while the nation is really awash in mass incarceration, the majority of whom have never had a grand jury indictment, unlike the average cop. The system is constructed to protect cops, no matter how outrageous their behavior. That's just a fact. And as the nation now celebrates historic events from the civil rights movement of half a century ago, the grim and ugly present of black life and black death in America makes that glowing history feel hollow indeed. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Operation Restore Trust? The flames of Ferguson have eaten their fill, and its eerie glow has cast light on how impotent are the black political class who cannot solve a problem that is a bane of black existence. Usually, when they speak, they seem ventriloquists who mouth the words of white politicians, drowning the deep concerns of their constituents in an ocean of empty words. Now, a collection of prominent officials have announced their intention to seriously tackle the issue of police abuse in black communities, from the U.S. president on down. Politicians, police officials, clergy, and community organizers are part of a coterie of people who have come together to restore trust between cops and the African-American community. When I saw this reference, my head swiveled. Restore trust? We wonder, when was there ever trust in the first place? The cruel, painful history of relations between police and the people is one of predation, not trust. Notably, black police officers are part of this discussion, but are we to make note of the fact that throughout many communities, for many, many years, they were forbidden to arrest white people? Police are stationed in black neighborhoods not to serve and protect black people nor their property. They are there to control black mobility and to discipline blacks for fear they'll pose a threat to white wealth, life, or property. Period. That's real talk, not these phony fairy tale discussions about restoring trust. For what trust can exist between the oppressors and the oppressed? Nor can body cams be the great solution that its supporters propose. Recall that cameras caught with crystal clarity. The brutal cop beatings of Rodney King in L.A., and before him, Delbert Africa in Philadelphia. Despite these captures on camera, both cases were thrown out, one by a jury, another by a judge. So much for cameras, huh? Who can trust a force that killed Black Panther leader Fred Hampton in his sleep? Who can trust an agency that bombed babies, Black Move babies, in Philadelphia in 1985? How can you restore something that has never existed? Until systems change, until cops aren't the only ones who face grand juries, until they too can be sent to death row for killing children, talk about restoring trust is just that. Talk. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
That's Cindy Sheehan's soapbox for today. I hope you go to the Partnership for a Civil Justice Fund and find out the latest developments on the so-called commission to investigate militarization. And of course, the U.S. is the federal government is the one responsible for the militarization of local police forces. And I also hope you go to Prison Radio and learn more about the silencing of Mumia Abu-Jamal and to listen to Mumia's really astute and relevant podcasts. And there are other prisoners and other people who also are speaking out on Prison Radio, and that's at prisonradio.org. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Donda Barr, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Mara Verheiden-Hilliard for her work and for being on the show. I'd like to also thank Mumia for never, ever being silent in the face of oppression. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.